Good afternoon and welcome to the 330 Sports Show. My name is Justin Coffin. Today is Tuesday, October 25th, 2022. I'm going to be joined by Joe Danier down here at Youngstown Studio. We're going to get into some Browns, some Buckeyes, a little bit of bourbon talk maybe. I was in Louisville this past weekend. We're also going to talk a little bit of the Cavs, and we will also talk some local high school football teams that have made the playoffs. But we're obviously going to start with the Browns because, I mean, who else do I get to bitch about all the time but the Cleveland freaking Browns? So 72 degrees or something like that, I think, on Sunday. So I was in, real quick, recap my weekend. Thursday, drive down to Louisville, you know, did some, went to 4th Street Live. That was a blast. Friday, did some bourbon trails. And then on Saturday, I wake up at 6 a.m., drive up to Columbus, go to the Ohio State game, hang out with some friends over there in Columbus, and then drive back Sunday morning and get home just in time to see the Cleveland Browns kick off against the Baltimore Ravens. Maybe I should have spent a little bit more time in Columbus and or made it back and went to the Youngstown Marathon, which our friends over there did a great job from what I saw. Joe, you were participated in it. So you and Ryan did the 5K.
Did.
Yeah. Very good. Are you happy with your time?
No.
No.
Like, I wasn't running for time on this one. This is the very few ones that I didn't even care about my pace at all. I was just taking it all in.
Like right now, I honestly, like I haven't been, I like walk or jog here and there, usually 4 or 5 times a week. But like if I was running for time right now, my times would be terrible because I'm not practicing for it, you know.
We did zero runs to prepare for it. In fact, I had 2 cigars the night before and some alcohol. That's not proper training.
Well, you should, if you smoked the cigar while running, that would be even better. You could do that with a 5K, I think.
Pull it off. Yeah.
Every like 10th of a mile, just take a puff or something, kick it off. And you might need to do that when you watch the Browns because you need to be calmed down as well. I think all of us know, you know, Joe's a Browns fan. I'm a Browns fan. You know, at this point of the season, usually we're either really excited or we're really disappointed. And I feel like at this point of the season, we kind of had mixed feelings coming into the season. We knew Deshaun Watson would be out. We knew, but we expected high things out of this defense. This defense has sucked. I will say Sunday, however, they played much, much better, the defense. But this team, I'm trying to think of a way to word this. This team is good enough to beat everyone on their schedule, and they are bad enough to lose to every team on their schedule. It's just, and it's so frustrating because they put a good offensive game together or they put a good defensive game together, but they never do it both at the same time. And they find these different freaking ways to lose every week. And I'm sick of it. And like, you know what? As a Browns fan, I should be, you know, enjoying Sundays and, or let me just say this. As a football fan, I should be enjoying Sundays at least 50% of the time, or, you know, like have a good feeling like, you know what? They played pretty well, but, you know, we didn't get this one. Let's go get the next week. That would have been all fine and good with this Sunday, because I actually thought the Browns played pretty well on Sunday. But you lose that Jets game where you blow the lead. You lose the Chargers game, which you could have won. You lose the Falcons game, which you should have won. And then you got your ass kicked by the Patriots the weekend before. So the Browns probably should be a 4 or 5 win team. But the fact is they're not. They're 2 and 5 and you are what you are. And apparently there was like some yelling and whatnot going on in the locker room. And we're going to talk to that, you know, talk about that in a little bit. But I'm just like to the point where maybe I need to stop letting the Browns ruin my weekend. And I've been through 0-16. I've been through 1-15. Joe, you've been the same. But for whatever reason, this year feels different because I think I'm let down because there's actual like expectations. So I don't know. What do you think about that?
Well, let me give you a little cautionary tale. Like, I emotionally checked out of the Browns a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
So, like, I watched maybe one series at all, and then I went off and did four-wheeling. So I really don't care. Yeah. Like, I don't care if they win. I don't care if they lose. They're and what I feel like maybe that I'm going to get through this season and maybe not really care until next year, honestly. Yeah, so it takes too much out of you.
It really does. And, you know, that Jets game really was like, oh man, this team's going to be 2-0, you know, and then we're going to take on the Steelers and then, you know, get them at home. And, you know, that Steelers game was nice. And that Cade York game winning field goal at the beginning of the season was nice, but there hasn't been a lot of good moments this season. It's just been a lot of disappointment. And I totally understand your feeling with that. And
here's the thing. Like, it used to be, and we've never been about winning. Right. Mm-hmm. So you don't watch the team because they which present is a sad you with a statement. Bunch of record.
Right.
But you watch it for the sort of like the narrative or the story behind the story, where you have the long odds games with people who are trying hard, mm-hmm. and, you know, these Cinderella stories. You don't have that in there. Like,
no.
You've got solid players that could totally win,
yeah.
and for whatever reason can't string a game together,
yep.
to actually win a game.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know if that's on, you know, I feel like, you know, this is just me speaking as a coach. I feel like when a coach or when a team wins, the coach gets too much credit. And when a team loses, the coach gets too much blame. But I feel like the Browns, it's kind of like, I don't know what's wrong with this team. I can't figure it out. And it's like, I almost feel like, are we just freaking cursed? Like, is this team just cursed? Like, are we ever, you know? And I get it. Like, we had a nice 2020, and ironically, no one was allowed at the stadiums because of COVID. And, you know, it was just a weird season, and we handled adversity very well in Stefanski's first year. This year, it's like guys are talking about commitment to the team. Like, are you doing your homework outside the building? Are you doing this and that? And I don't know, like, if these guys don't care, why should I care?
Absolutely.
Why should you care?
No.
And, you know,
think about how they're assembling this team. They're using
yeah.
analytics, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they're putting numbers up on the board. It isn't about the personality, the storyline, or the player.
Yeah.
Right? It's about what they can do for the team. So if you do that, you've got to hit home runs.
Right.
Because if you have a shitty team and you don't win, I mean, come on.
Well, like, yeah, no, keep going.
With the Indians, like, yeah. they set up the players where they took these young guys and they told their story, and then they came through on top of that. So a Cinderella season can actually be something you can believe in.
Yeah, yeah, and like those Guardians or Indians, whatever you guys want to call them, but the Browns are, I believe, the youngest NFL team in the league. However, you got Myles Garrett. You got Jadeveon Clowney, Denzel Ward's now a veteran. Jacoby Brissett's 29 years old. You know, like, Amari Cooper's in his eighth year. You have leaders, and Nick Chubb's a good leader. But a lot of those guys are quiet and they're not like demonstrative. So I don't understand if it's a leadership thing from the coaching or if it's a ownership thing, or, you know, the Haslams have been criticized and for good reason. I think Andrew Berry is a very good general manager, but it's kind of like there's just something off, and I can't put my finger on it what it is.
Well, here's an analogy. Do you remember there was a basketball team they assembled of all NBA players, and they struggled against well-coached teams? That's sort of like what it feels like.
Yeah, like almost like in the Olympics where, you know, these teams are – but, I mean, these guys are all freaking NFL players, you know, just like what they're going against. And, you know, again, I think one of those things like talent or potential is like a coaching killer.
For
you
sure.
know, it's like if – yeah, what you did in college, that's wonderful. What you did last season, that's great. But if it's not coming together on the field, it doesn't matter how good you are or what you did last season or in the past or how much money you make. Because if you're not getting the job done, you're not getting the job done. And these rosters are 53 people. It's not like college where, hey, we got 85 scholarship guys. This guy's going to push you for playing time. It's like, no, I don't know. Like, I don't think it's the effort with the Browns. I think they're putting out good effort. I think it's communication, trust, misplay calling, bad special teams, which we'll get into. But like, it's just like, it's something every week, whether it's, you know, the, you know, blowing a 13-point lead with a minute and 55, or, you know, the Chargers being the worst run team in the league, and then you shut down one of the best quarterbacks, but then their run game destroys you. And it's just something else every week with this team. The Bears last night destroyed the Patriots. The Bears are one of the worst teams in the NFL, and they ran the ball. What did we not do against the Patriots? Run the ball. What are the Browns really good at? Running the ball. And that's very, very frustrating. And again, I don't want to point the finger at Kevin Stefanski. I think he's a good coach. I think the offense has been pretty good this year. But like I said, it's like, I feel like when the offense is good, the defense sucks. And when the defense is good, the offense sucks. And it's like, you know, we can play the excuse game of, you know, Amari Cooper actually caught a game-winning touchdown in that game, but he pushed off, and it was the right call. And we can blame the refs, too, for that. It was a terrible false start call against the Browns, which would have given him a first down. And again, maybe that's a legit excuse or a good reason, whatever you want to say, but the fact is the Browns are still losing. And, you know, we can't point the finger at the officials. We can't point the finger. You know, it's like, there's some saying, when you point a finger at something, there's 10 pointing back at you. And it's like, you know, these guys got to take some ownership. You know, you're getting a paycheck every week. Do your damn job and do it well. And from what I've heard, Joe Woods, the defensive coordinator, people aren't loving the job he's doing. You're hearing trade speculation now, and it's just frustrating. So I don't know. I don't know.
So I got called a Fairweather fan already because of my jaded nature.
Oh, sure. Yeah. There. Yeah. That's understandable.
Of 20 freaking years, a Fairweather fan. I mean, that's not exactly the definition of Fairweather.
I think, no, exactly. And I know you're a former season ticket holder and stuff, but this team, you know, it's like being in an abusive relationship. Right, it really is. And I don't want to make light of, you know, something like that, but this team is hard to love. And I put it out there on social media too. Like, I hate that I love the Browns. You know what I mean? And eventually it's like, you know, I keep giving and giving. Like, I'll, you know, go to the games, I'll buy gear, you know, I'll support the city of Cleveland, this and that. But it's like, eventually this team's got to give you something back. Yeah. You know, and yeah, we got the one playoff win, but we have one playoff win in like 30 years. Right. It's like, at some point, this has to be, you know, it feels like you've made all these deposits, and it's like, when is that payoff coming? Right. And so far it hasn't. No, so
not at all. But you know what? Honestly, these coaches in the NFL are really good. And and if you just come and play your playbook at somebody,
except for Denver's, Denver's isn't very good.
they're going to, if you just play your playbook, they're going to beat you, because the coach's job is to find out, watch your tape, find out where you're weak, and play at you in a way that gives you an advantage to win the game, whatever that means. Like you were pointing out, if you know that you need to run in order to win the game, and you do everything opposite of that, you're not playing a smart playbook. You're just playing your playbook.
Exactly. And I get, if it's third and 10, you know, you're not going to run the ball there. You know, that's an obvious passing situation.
But other coach is going to put you in those situations where there's not a good answer, because they're brilliant coaches.
Exactly. Exactly. And at some point too, it's like, you got to look at the players, and it's like, the coaches aren't designing like this. This is where I get on, you know, I don't like just firing people just to fire people. Like, I don't think it makes a lot of sense. Maybe for the morale of the team, maybe it like gets some people fired up and like lights a fire under their ass. It's like, hey, I might be next. But Joe Woods is not calling a defense to blow a coverage for a 78 yard pass or something like that. You know, he's putting these guys, exactly. It's like, you know, you're putting people in a position to succeed, and maybe there's some kinks in there where they need to iron that out. And I actually thought he designed a really good defense. Like, Lamar Jackson had like 9 completions, and the Browns like almost doubled the Ravens in yardage. And Mark Andrews, who's like the best second, well, probably third best tight end in the league, didn't have a catch in the entire game, and he's one of the best weapons in the NFL. So the Browns played well enough that they should have won, but they're not getting it done in all aspects. And the special teams is another thing. They stink. The special teams are not special at all, and that's very, very frustrating. So
Can we bitch about one more thing about
Please.
Right, I heard all about the false start that wasn't, that took 5 yards away, that took that the kick that could have been to time out. What you saw it. So
it was in my opinion, complete bullshit. Now, this is my understanding of the rule. So the center, whose name is Charlie Hewitt, and he's like one of the longest tenured Browns on the team. So you look at the line, no one moves. The only movement was, and the center is allowed to do this, he ducked his head to look back at the snapper to get the sign that the snap was ready to go. So he ducked his head. When he ducked his head, Ravens jumped offside and encroached on the Browns, which made players move. So,
and the flag came from behind. So if the official was looking at the movement that maybe the Raven, I don't know.
And then Harbaugh, you could see him mouthing. He moved the ball. He did not move the ball. You can go back and watch 100 replays in 100 different angles. There was no movement. It was very, very frustrating because I believe it was 4th and 5, which 4th and 5, I think it ended up being a 60-yard field goal. So doing the reverse math, they were around the 42-yard line then. So that would have put them somewhere around the 37-yard line. They get a first down then with that first down. And then, you still have 2 minutes to go in the game. You can easily get down and score a touchdown or get that tying field goal and take it to overtime. So just a really, really frustrating situation.
So let's take it further. Do you think these things are on purpose where they don't want the Browns in on this? Do you think it's terrible officiating?
It just feels like I mentioned the whole curse thing early, and I don't think it's in a legit curse. It is around Halloween time, but I mean, it just feels like this team has such a streak of bad luck. You go way back to Bottlegate and all these, it just feels like there's so many calls, and I'm sure there's, you know, the Saints a couple years ago had some bad luck called against them and where they, were eliminated from the NFC Championship game. And I know other teams get missed calls or blown calls, but it seems like there's a lot. Earlier in that drive, Jacoby Brissett hit Peoples Jones for a big gain. He got hit in the head. That's called 99 times out of 100. They actually threw the flag and then they picked it up and said, no roughing the passer. It's like, I don't think that should be a flag either, but by the letter of the law and you actually threw a flag, that's how it should be called. So they conversed twice on that drive and both calls went the opposite way of the Browns. And it's just a very, very frustrating situation because, you know, this team's making enough mistakes that we don't need to be playing 12 against 11 too with the officials. So
see, computers could be making these calls. They need to make it a computer system that's completely 100% accurate.
Yeah.
Take people out of the game.
I feel like we need to have a whole other podcast on. I hate the whole spotting of the ball. I think that's so stupid and so old school. It's like we could put chips in the ball. We could put chips 100%. In the field, and that could be an easily,
Part of your uniform's thing. A chip that says when your knee goes down or when your bottom hits the ground.
Right. And maybe that's more down the road, but I think we have the technology to get there, 100%. At least for the very minimum for the ball, in a first down marker. So I don't know. So I can tell you this, the Browns will not ruin your Sunday for the next 2 weeks. Here's why. They don't play till Monday.
Yay!
So the Browns play the Bengals on Halloween, which kind of feels like the season is on life support. You're 2-5. Deshaun Watson returns week 13, which is game 12. But the next four games are this. Cincy, then your bye week, Miami, Buffalo, and the Buccaneers, stink right now, which is really crazy because Tom Brady, I mean, he's going through a divorce. He's not playing well on the field. The Buccaneers look bad. So I would say three of those four games are winnable with the Bengals. Bengals are playing pretty well right now. Dolphins are a beatable team. The Bills are just better than us. that's going to be a tough game to win, but you could beat the Buccaneers. So those are all winnable games. If you look, and then obviously Deshaun Watson, who there was a story last week that came out and said, Roger Goodell said he's meeting all the terms of his suspension right now. So he's on track to return that week 13 against Houston. So apparently he's going to his counseling and, you know, making amends and doing all, you know, the things he needs to be doing. You know, and again, he is only allowed to get massages from team licensed therapists. So there will be no funny business outside of that, depending on what you believe or may not believe with that. So I was waiting. I was giving you the opening there. I was trying to lob it up there for you.
So many of them. There are only so many words for massage.
Yes, like, that's true.
So I was going to ask you if, you know, he can massage the rest of the season or whatever, but it seemed forced. So I didn't do it.
That's fine. That's fine. But, and by no means, you know, in the NFL, can you win just like six games? It is not an easy thing. But if you look at the last six games, they're all winnable for the Browns. So if the Browns can get three wins or four wins by the time he gets back, you know, there's the potential for a playoff berth. But, you know, so there's still some hope. But I think you almost have to win against the Bengals. And like I mentioned, Kareem Hunt and I believe it was Greedy Williams, there's some rumors right now that, you know, those guys might get moved. So we'll see how that all falls. But, you know, when the Browns win, I like to do game balls. When they lose, I like to do some takeaways from my thoughts on the game. So here are my takeaways from the last week's game against the Ravens. So the leadership was in question. You know, apparently there was a lot of yelling in the locker room, players, coaches, and they were basically saying the leadership of the team in question. So I think Mike Prefer needs to go. I think the special team stinks. And that's, you know, the Ravens got a couple short fields. The Browns have, you know, not done a great job in the special teams department, and that has hurt them this year as well.
Controlling the ball during returns, I just cannot understand that we're so bad at it.
It's been very, very frustrating. I know Donovan Peoples-Jones isn't going to get these long returns and stuff, but at least he'll secure the ball. So it's like, I would just rather him be back there, catch the ball, fair catch it, and be done with it.
Don't try to do anything but secure the ball. Exactly. Don't even give me a return.
Exactly.
Don't fumble the ball.
And I'm pretty sure, I can't say this for 100%, but I think we maybe seen the last of Anthony Schwartz. He was a healthy scratch for this last game. He's just not, you know, I think the Browns have to admit they made a mistake with that draft pick. And, you know, maybe if the last couple of weeks he'll prove me wrong, and I hope he does, but I think he's got to go. I think he's just not very good.
I think pretty much all of the fan base already would have made that call from before the season beginning.
Yes. Yeah. And you use a third round pick on a guy, you know, you want to give him at least 2 years, but you know, he is not showing anything for the team right now. So, so again, two games back in the AFC North, not a good thing. You know, you're two games back of both the Ravens and the Bengals. And I put, is this a must win game? I think it might be, you know, so that's where we land on that. The phrase only in Cleveland, we've all heard it, whether it be with the Indians, the Cavs, the Browns, or just whatever. But you know, like, I don't like the phrase only in Cleveland. One of my biggest pet peeves is when I drive around and I see someone with a bumper sticker on it says stuck in Ohio. It's like, well, get the hell out of here. Nobody wants you anyway. So it's like, you know, you don't want to live in Ohio. Go get out of here. Go to Pennsylvania, go to Kentucky, go to Indiana, go somewhere where they want you. Cause we don't want you if you're going to be, trashing that. So,
you know what that actually means, by the way?
No,
it's like a winter sports team. Oh. Like, I always thought it was some kind of statement like that, like, I hate Ohio, but I guess stuck in Ohio is someone who like snowboarding and extreme skiing and stuff like that.
All right. Well, I apologize. I eat my words on that.
Let me make sure that that's not total horseshit.
Okay. No, that's fine. That's fine. So, but I don't like the phrase only in Cleveland because it just gives a bad connotation. It's like, well, only bad stuff happens. That's not true. You know, like, yeah, sure it does. But it feels fitting for the Browns. Oh, you found it. So what does it say? So is there a passion to showcase Ohio's adventure side through our visuals. We are proud to be stuck in Ohio. Okay. All right. I was stuck in Ohio. I apologize. So I just inferred that that was a negative thing.
I had no idea, but obviously I see bumper stickers all over Ohio on it. So
okay.
I'm going to say half the people that put the bumper stick in it are saying what you're saying.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. And by no means am I stuck in Ohio. If I want to go somewhere, I'll travel outside of Ohio, but it's a nice place to live. It really is. So, I mean, have you seen the freaking leaves? And it's like what? 70 degrees right now, and it's October 25th. It's not all bad, but the Browns, people will say the Browns are the Browns and the Browns doing Brown things and, you know, whatever.
The Browns is the Browns.
The Browns is the Browns. Yes. Which was locker room material a couple of years ago, but, it's kind of fitting and it's kind of frustrating because as a Browns fan, you know, like, obviously, I have friends that are Steelers fans and some that are, I don't really have any Ravens fans, but like I know some Bengals fans and, you know, some just Buffalo Bills fans and other things like that. And it's very frustrating because it's like, these guys don't have to deal with this shit, you know, or these girls don't have to deal with this shit. Only we do. And right. It's really frustrating.
I have a friend who we were both Cleveland Browns fans. And when they split, he became a Ravens fan.
Okay.
And like we talk about it, like it's not even like it's not the original Browns anymore. It's a completely separate team. And I keep inviting him back to be the Browns fans. But would you, if you were a Ravens fan, getting used to winning and having seasons that you're proud of, maybe even Super Bowl in there?
Right. Well, like if what would be frustrating is if that guy came back when the Browns got good. Again, and he kind of jumped on the bandwagon after being with the Ravens. It's like, nah, that's not how it works, buddy. It's like, if you're going to be with us, you got to suffer with us too. But whatever, you know, everyone's welcome on the bandwagon, but no one wants to be on the bandwagon right now. So it's a tough look right now. So hopefully we can get this turned around, figure it out, before, you know, this season is basically meaningless and worthless and over and all that shit. So
do you feel better? Like it feels like you did a dump here and that you got it all out of your system.
I feel a little bit better.
Okay,
I feel a little bit better. I got another rant coming on Ohio State, and by the way, Ohio State is playing about as well as anyone in the country. It's not about the team, it's about something that happened on Saturday, and I'll explain that in a minute. But I'm gonna get another rant out of my system. So I think most of you guys know me. I'm a pretty nice person, but when something bothers me and pisses me off, I'm going to probably share it. So I'm going to share that in just a minute. There's a little tease for you right there. And I'm going to tell you this little backstory. So
veins are popping out of his head right now.
Like you can't see that. Another thing that started out as a positive and turned into a negative for the Browns is David Njoku, your guy. He has been awesome. He is tied with Amari Cooper for receptions on the leads the team. But he goes out with an ankle injury and he's expected to miss 2 to 5 weeks. Just a frustrating situation once again. So,
Now that you said that you wouldn't half mind if Kareem Hunt was part of a trade, was there a reason behind that? Do you think he's a disruptor? Like
he did ask for a trade in the off season, or in training camp, and the Browns don't use him, to the best of their ability, in my opinion. And if you can acquire some assets for him, you do have two really good running backs behind him. And I know he's a Cleveland guy, and I get that. But if we're not using a guy to his ability, and we can play D'Ernest Johnson or Ford, the rookie that's behind him, you know, that's a position of luxury right there for us. You know, you got Chubb, you got Hunt, you got Johnson, and you got Ford. Those guys are all really good. And Chubb's not going anywhere.
Right.
You know, I would argue Nick Chubb is the face of the Cleveland Browns.
Just do not put him on a Madden game at all.
Please do that. He won't turn into Peyton Hillis by any means. But Nick Chubb, you know, like he's going to be your workhorse. He's going to be your back. And I have an interesting stat on him in a minute, but if Kareem Hunt isn't being utilized, might as well get something for him. A team like the Buffalo Bills would love to have Kareem Hunt. The Jets just lost their running back. I know they traded for another one, but you know, there's teams in the NFL that need a good back like him. And if you can get something back, then why not? So I think if you're trading a corner like Greedy Williams, that's a position also of strength, but it's not a position that has super, super strong depth like the running back position. And maybe if you can acquire even a young player that you can bring in at receiver or tight end, then maybe you can develop over the next few weeks, and you have a bye week coming up where maybe you can catch them up to speeds. Maybe not a terrible idea. So.
And it feels like we're going to get a really good draft pick. It's in this upcoming draft.
You do know we do not have a first rounder till 2025.
Yeah.
So the Browns will have a couple third rounds. They have their second round, but
you can trade. You know, trade down a little bit now if you get rid of Greedy and get assemble some draft picks.
Yeah, and then maybe package and move up a little bit. The Browns do have a nice young roster, but you want to keep accumulating young talent, and that's kind of the analytics thing you were talking about earlier. So Nick Chubb, obviously a great, great player and doing amazing things, leading the league in rushing. Seemed to be like having a quiet game, but he went like 16 carries for 91 yards and a touchdown. Just a really, really good thing. And the defense was really good. I want to give credit where credit's due. JOK played a great game. Miles Garrett has been banged up and, you know, has shown some flaws this year, but played well. The secondary played much better. Especially with Denzel Ward out. I think Martin Emerson is a diamond in the rough we found in the third round. I think he, if he came out in the draft this year, he might be a first rounder. So we're looking really, really, really good with that. So I wanted to end at least on a positive note with that. So let's take a look at overall what the Browns have done this year as a team. Let me start with the positive here before we get into the negative. They're still 10th in the league in scoring at 24 points a game. They don't pass it a whole lot, but 22nd in the league. They're third in the league in rushing with 164 yards a game. And they're still putting up the sixth most yards in the entire league with 378 yards per game. Counteract that to the defense. Defense is giving up 346 yards a game, which is right in the middle of the pack. But rushing, they're giving up too many rushing yards. 136, which is 25th best in the league. And obviously, what's the killer is the points. You're giving up 26.6 points a game, which is 28th in the league, or what, fifth worst? So just not good enough on the defensive end. And I think this team is kind of maybe turning a corner on the defensive end, but you want to figure it out before it's too late and these games are meaningless. So again, there's some reports out there that Kareem Hunt and Greedy Williams are possibly on the trading block. We will see. I don't think the Browns are making any calls, but if teams are calling them, they're probably going to listen and see what draft capital they can acquire. So that's where we stand on that. That is November 1st, which is next Tuesday after the Monday Night Football game. So we'll see how they factor in there. This is a very interesting did you know, and it makes a whole lot of sense, and it's very common sense, but you might not know. But when Nick Chubb has 20 or more carries, the Browns are 2-0. When he gets less than 20 carries, they are 0-5. So what does that tell you, Joe?
Let's see. I'm going to play offensive coordinator for a minute. Nick Chubb, run up the middle, game break.
Give Nick Chubb the ball. Simple as that. And I don't know what it is, because it felt like last year they weren't giving him the ball a lot. And this year they're not giving, he is getting a lot of carries, but not as many as maybe he should be getting, you know, to close out some games or in goal line situations and stuff like that. So, you know, you give Nick Chubb the ball enough, you're going to have more successful plays than not, and most likely you're going to win more games than not. So, the proof is in the pudding. 2-0 when he gets more than 20, 0-5 when he does not. So that's where we're at. So let's take a look real quick at the AFC North. Baltimore, Cincy, both 4-3, and the Browns and the Steelers at 2-5. Baltimore gets Tampa this weekend, who's struggling. The Browns and the Bengals play each other, and the Steelers have a very tough stretch coming up. Got beat by Miami last week, and this week are at the, I believe, Philadelphia, 6-0. So they're playing some really, really good football over there in the NFC East. Just overall, As a whole, I've been making picks straight up this year. So last week I went 9-5, 48-28 for the season. But you know, just a few games that stood out. Carolina with their like fourth string quarterback smacking around Tampa Bay 21-3. You know, Seattle is maybe good. We thought Seattle might be one of the worst teams in the league this year. They go and beat the Chargers, like beat them up pretty bad. I mentioned the Bears last night knocking off New England. That was a huge surprise. And, you know, Tennessee, you know, Tennessee's maybe starting to show a little bit of muscle there. They're playing well. So that's kind of where we're at. We'll take a look real quick at just the AFC standings because, you know, we don't spend a ton of time on the NFC, but you know, the Bills, Ravens, Titans and Chiefs, the Bills and the Chiefs are head and shoulders above the rest of the teams right now. Baltimore shows flaws, but right now those would be your top four seeds. Look at the Jets. The Jets are 5-2. Who would have thought the Jets are 5-2 and the Giants are 6-1. Who would have thought 11-3 for the two New York teams coming into the season? You would have thought those teams would have stunk. But Denver stinks. Denver's maybe the most disappointing team in the league. And Russell Wilson looks just terrible. So he actually is sitting out this week. And something that was interesting is once he was pulled out of the lineup, the line didn't change. And that tells you all you need to know, because normally if a starting quarterback gets sat down, that line's going to go the other way a couple points, and it did not at all. So, Joe, I mentioned it's Halloween. So here I found this new Halloween costume out by our friends at Barstool Cleveland. It includes false hope, severe depression, alcoholism, and ruined Sundays. It's called being a Browns fan. But as I mentioned, they won't be able to do that to you for the next two Sundays because they don't play the next two Sundays. So, right. You know, we got a Monday night game and then a bye week. So, you can maybe have some hope. Go outside and enjoy the beautiful weather we're having in Northeast Ohio here. So let's switch to one of the really good teams in Ohio, the Ohio State Buckeyes, maybe the best team in all of college football. They are currently ranked number 2. They get a 54-10 win over Iowa. And this is how good Ohio State is. They played really bad the first two quarters. They played really, really bad football. And they still won by 44 points. It's Iowa's worst loss under Kirk Ferentz, I believe, since 1999. And 54 points against Iowa. Ohio State has now scored more than 20 points in 60 consecutive games, which is one away from tying the all-time record set by Oklahoma back in 16-17, which is amazing. Before the game on Saturday, Iowa's defense gave up 59 points the entire season, which is 9.83 points per game. Ohio State puts 54, really 47, because Ohio State had a defensive touchdown. But the Buckeye defense allowed only 158 yards against Iowa, which is the fewest all of this season and since they played Indiana last season. Buckeye leaves for some of the players of the game from Saturday. CJ Stroud, for the season, he is at 28 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. He's averaging 290 yards per game, and he has 72 career touchdown passes, which is all the way up to second now in Ohio State history. Marvin Harrison Jr., Joel Klatt mentioned on the broadcast that Ohio State's Marvin Harrison Jr. might be the best receiver in the NFL in 3 or 4 years. That's how good this kid is. He is a sophomore in college. I don't even know if he's allowed to drink yet. I don't think he's that old. Third game ball or Buckeye leave goes to Tanner McAllister, who is the corner that came over from Oklahoma State in the transfer portal. He knew Jim Knowles' defense, comes in. He had 2 interceptions on Saturday. He now has 3 for the season and 10 tackles. Tommy Eichenberg is another you know, silver bullet defender who gets Buckeye leave this week. 7 tackles, 1 pass defense, 1 interception, and he scored a touchdown on that interception for the season. 57 tackles, 2.5 sacks in so far this year. And then Noah Ruggles. I just want to give the kicker a little credit because he was busy in the first half. Ohio State had a lot of short fields, got a lot of non-touchdown drives, but Noah Ruggles bailed him out. 4 for 4 field goals, 6 for 6 extra points, which is 18 points on the day for him. He is 6 of 7 field goals on the season with a 46 yard long, and he is 47 of 47 extra points. Ohio State has played 7 games. He has kicked 47 extra points. I mean, could you imagine if the Browns kicked 47 extra points for the whole season? I mean, just insane. Let's give you the by the numbers for Ohio State, their offense and defense. I mean, this is just beautiful to look at, like especially comparing them with where we just did with the Browns. But Ohio State is number 2 in the country in points per game on offense, 49.6 points a game. They're averaging 7.77 yards per play, which is number 1 in the country. They're tied for first with Tennessee with 47 offensive touchdowns, and they actually dropped from number 2 to number 4 in yards per game, 517.4 yards per game. On defense, and this is where their major struggles have been the last 2 seasons. But on defense, you bring in Jim Knowles. They paid him a lot of money, but he has turned this defense around a lot. They call him, his nickname is kind of the mad scientist. He is a Ivy League educated, former head coach at Cornell, former defensive coordinator all over at different places. And everywhere he goes, they get better almost immediately. But the Ohio State defense is only giving, they're giving up less than 15 points a game, which is 5th at best in the country. They're 4.21 yards per play, which is 5th best in the country. They've only allowed 12 touchdowns by the opponent, which is 6th best in the country. And they're allowing less than 240 yards per game, which is number 2 in the entire country. So phenomenal stuff. I mean, Ohio State and Alabama, I believe, are the only 2 schools to be top 10 in both offense and defense by the numbers. And that's just fantastic stuff right there for the Buckeyes. Real quick look at the Big Ten standings. In the East, you got some big games this week. We'll talk to you about that in a second. But Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, Maryland all sitting at the top there. Maryland is looking like a pretty decent team right now. Penn State, Ohio State will travel to Penn State this weekend to take on the number 13 Nittany Lions. Right now, if you look at Ohio State's schedule, it looked pretty tough at the beginning of the season. Right now, it does not look tough based on, the teams that we thought were going to be good, like Wisconsin, Notre Dame, who have struggled a lot this season. But Illinois kind of being the ringleader in the West over there. They are the number 17 team in the country, and the Big Ten has 4 ranked teams currently in the top 25. We take a look. Oh, you know what? We'll get to the Big Ten matchups later. Here's my rant on Ohio State. So I actually sent this to the ticket office, and I'm not one to complain usually, but I'm going to just like paint the picture for you. And, you know, if the graphic's up, whatever, that's fine. But I'm just going to tell you the story in my own words. So again, you know, I got up in the morning, drove to Columbus and got there, parked, you know, had a drink before the game, went, had a great time going to the game and all that stuff up until halftime. So let me explain what happened. So sit in my seat about 4 minutes, 4 or 5 minutes before halftime, or 6 minutes. I don't know what it was, but when you're at a professional stadium and there's, you know, 70, 80 in Ohio State's case, 105,000 people, you want to beat the line to the bathroom. So I was like, you know what, I'm just gonna go down to the bathroom, wash my hands, get some food, and then I saw some friends, said hi to them, and then I started walking back to my seat. So by that time, it was probably been about 20, 30 minutes, whatever, And I get back to my seat, and there's about 4 or 5 minutes left before the start of the third quarter, right? No big deal. Okay. So I walk up to my seat, and, you know, like some people, it drives me nuts, but like anytime someone walks by me, I get up and I try to be respectful and give them some room. You know, certain people look at you like, what are you doing? Why are you walking by me? You know, and that pisses me off. But whatever, I'll let that slide. So I inch by, sneak by. So I get back to my seat. And in this graphic, I put where I'm sitting. So I sat in 29A, row 11, seat 23. So those were my seats. And I messaged this to the Ohio State Athletic Department, ticketing department, I should say. So the arrow kind of points to about where I was sitting. Pretty nice seats in the end zone by the student section, all that stuff. So I get back to my seat, and the two people to my left were the same people that were sitting there before halftime. They were fine. But when I got back, there was no one to the right of me, you know, in the first half. So I get back to my seat. I, you know, what I thought was my seat, and go to sit down. There is about this much room, and I can see the number. I was seat number 23. I could just see the number. And Ohio State has some chair back seats, but these were benches that I was sitting on. So if you've ever sat in a bench area at a stadium, you know, sometimes that could be a tight squeeze. I get that. I'm respectful of people left and right of me, but I get back and there's literally no room to, sit. And every single person in my section was sitting. People behind me, people in front of me. And I'm talking like, this is 1,000, 1,200, whatever people in this section. So I come back and just look around, and like the people that are new look at me like I'm a dumbass. Like, what are you doing? And I'm like, oh, this is my seat. Are you sure you're not in the right row? Here's my seat. Like, here's my ticket. So they're like, oh yeah, that's your seat. So still nothing. No one moves. And the person that was next to me won't even like make eye contact with me because I know they don't want to move. And I am so frustrated at this point because now I've been standing here for 4 or 5 minutes and it's about to start the third quarter and still no one is standing up. Keep in mind the bands were already done and this and that. So there was really, you know, there was some stuff on the scoreboard, but that was about it. Behind me, I have a couple elderly people. So I wanted to be respectful and sit down. So, you know, they're not just staring at my ass the whole time or staring at my back or whatever. You know, and this is a section where sometimes people stand up, some people sit down, whatever. But I didn't have any choice. I was standing kind of like, you know, when you're in a crowded elevator and you have to kind of stand mm-hmm. like sideways,
yeah,
awkwardly. It was kind of like that. And I was getting really frustrated because, you know, this wasn't like 20, 30 seconds. This was like 5 or 6 minutes. And by the time it's Seven Nation Army that Ohio State always plays for the kickoff song. By the time that started queuing up, I was like, this is ridiculous. So I finally was like, I yelled down, like not yelled, but I said down to people 4 or 5 seats down. I said, can you guys scoot down a little bit? And there was at least a couple feet they could have scooted down. They said no. And I was pissed. And I literally underneath my breath said, F it. And I just left. And I'm pissed because anyone that goes to these games, no, these are not cheap seats. It's very expensive. And it's like, why is your seat more valuable than mine? You know, it's like, all I asked was like, give me 6 inches. I'm not a big guy. I can fit in there. And I'd be fine standing, especially if everyone else was standing. But I was trying to be respectful of the older couple behind me. So that's where that was. I ended up walking down and went over to a couple other sections and like stood in like the entryway and just watched the game from there. And I've been in so many games at that stadium, and that was my first really negative experience, and I was pissed off. So I wanted to share my rant. Mm. You think that was a good rant, Joe?
I do.
Okay.
See, I was hoping that you would say, so you found an usher and the usher came in and just started body slamming people out into the right spot. That's what should have
happened. Yeah. And again, like I am not a confrontational person, unless I'm like completely backed into a corner, then maybe I'll come out and like, you know, defend myself a little bit. But
well, let me know how they respond, because they got to take care of their fan base, right? Well, people who buy the tickets.
I'm not just a fan. I'm a donor and I am an alumni too. Right. So, you know, again, I would not speak ill of Ohio State, and this is not necessarily Ohio State's fault, but it was just very awkward, very disrespectful. And I left the game, you know, and I love the Buckeyes, but I left the game very disappointed. So that's where I'll leave it.
All right.
And by the way, I had one drink, you know, all day on.